My last guest this week, certainly not least, is Mike Venuto, co-founder and chief investment officer at Toroso Investments. Mike is also co-founder of Tidal ETF Services, which actually earlier this year won ETF.com's new ETF Issuer of the Year for 2019. They now have over $1 billion in assets under administration. Toroso as a whole oversees $2.8 billion. But Mike knows the ETF space inside and out. He's absolutely one of the original ETF nerds, and he's now on the line with me from New York. Mike, always great connecting. How have you been doing?
Been doing great, Nate. Glad to be back, and thank you for having me.
Okay, so were you the one who originally popularized the ETF nerd term? Although I guess I don't know if you can put popular and ETF nerd in the same sentence, but I know you have the ETF nerd pins. I actually have one of those. Was all of this your doing?
Yeah, so here was the original thing. About 2 years ago, maybe three now, you know, in the COVID-19 world, time gets a little confusing. I decided to write a paper about concentration of holdings within indexes using the Hirschman-Herfindahl index. And I made a joke that only ETF nerds would enjoy this paper. And then I had my marketing people make a little ETF nerd symbol. And it kind of took off from there. We used it at the big conferences each year as a pin and kind of a badge of honor, right? Like, you know, it's kind of like the AV Club. Those are the people now running Microsoft and Amazon. So badge of honor for the ETF nerds. And we've got it's become something much bigger. You know, Tom Lydon and Tom Hendrickson kind of took it and to the next level, and it's been very collegiate, and we love that sort of thing. So that paper still exists. It's on our ETFthinktank.com, and I'm glad the nerds have gone beyond me.
Yeah, I think I've read that paper, and in terms of the pens, I'm going to need one that's of an aging, balding man, if you have one of those.
We do.
Well, Mike, I know I ask you this every time you're on the podcast, but we always do have new listeners joining us. Do you mind just briefly explaining what Toroso does and the relationship with Tidal and what you're doing with the ETF Think Tank? You're just involved with ETFs in so many different ways. So do you mind walking through just the basics here?
Sure. So Toroso Investments is a firm that I started a little over 8 years ago. And I came out of the hedge fund world where we did deep dive on individual stocks. And I wanted to do deep dives on ETFs. I felt like no firm at that time had really gone beyond what the name and the expense ratio was, and we wanted to build that. That IP is owned at the Toroso Investments level. And underneath that umbrella, we have multiple different ways of using that research and IP. We have a traditional wealth management platform. We have an asset management platform where we manage portfolios of ETFs as well as sub-advised ETFs like Block and BAT and the gig economy, Giggy, and help with RPAR, the risk parity ETFs, things like that. And then finally, we have Tidal ETF Services, which is where we help people launch and grow ETFs. We have a number of sponsors there, from Columbia Threadneedle to EMQ2 to Robo to AGFIQ, and we've helped people like Blue Cross Blue Shield, SoFi, Aris Consulting, SP Funds, all launch ETFs in that Tidal Trust. All of those in pieces are supported by the ETF Think Tank, which is our 100% free resource on all things ETF and thought leadership that anybody can access at ETFthinktank.com to get, you know, ETF software tools or help with your social media or more research on what's going on in the ETF industry. And I know that's a lot, but that's the whole story.
Yeah, and I've seen with the ETF Think Tank, you're now doing like weekly happy hours or something, correct? Where you're interviewing somebody from across the industry?
Yeah, so it's called Get Think Tank.
That's right.
And we do it every Thursday at 5 o'clock, and we've had on, you know, Mark Faber and Jim Bianco and Mike Novogratz and Jan Van Eck. We all have a nice drink together. We give everybody Zoom background so it looks like we're in a bar together. And we have a very loose live discussion on what's going on in the markets at getthinktanks.com.
Okay, so in terms of the ETFs that are currently under the Toroso and Title umbrella, you rattled off a few, but I want to go through these, and I hope I have all these right. So let me just go through this list. So I show that you're the sub-advisor on the SoFi ETF, so the SoFi Select 500 ETF, ticker SFY, and the SoFi Next 500 ETF, ticker SFYX, which I should know, both of those are currently free, right? Zero expense ratios. And then there's also the SoFi Gig Economy ETF, GIGE, along with an ETF that recently changed its approach, the SoFi 50 ETF, SFYF, that tracks the 50 most widely held U.S.-listed stocks and SoFi users' accounts, right? It's a crowdsourced ETF. And then you also manage the investments for two Amplify ETFs, the Transformational Data Sharing ETF, ticker BLOCK, which you mentioned, and the Advanced Battery Metals and Materials ETF, ticker BAT, B-A-T-T. And then you have the Risk Parity ETF, RPAR, which that thing's been highly successful since it launched in December. And then rounding out the lineup, you have the Aware Ultra Short Duration Enhanced Income ETF, ticker AWTM, and then the two Sharia-compliant ETFs from SP Funds, which we've actually spotlighted those on the show, tickers SPUS and SPSK. Did I get all of those right, or am I missing anything?
You got them all right. It's insanely impressive. I would say the only thing that's extra is we now have acquired a mutual fund that trades ETFs, and it's the number one performing mutual fund year-to-date. It's up close to 60%, and that's ATAC. It's Michael Gayad's fund. Most of you have probably seen him on social media or through CMT or through the award-winning papers, but it tactically trades ETFs in a mutual fund wrapper.
Mike, what's the overall approach here? Like, how do you determine who you're going to partner with?
So, for number one, it's culture, right? We rejected, I would say, over 50 ETF ideas last year. The idea that it's Field of Dreams, that worked in 2009, maybe all the way up to like 2013. When I joined Global X years ago, you know, we could still throw something out there and hope for the best. We look for people who are actually committed to getting it to work. It's not just, here's my idea, license my IP. It's, here's my idea, here's my distribution plan, here's my existing assets, here's why I think this is actually a good investment, not just a fad. And those are the kinds of people we work with. That's why we work with a SoFi or a Blue Cross or an Aris or an SP or an Amplify.
Did I see correctly, and I don't know if you're involved with this, I guess you tell me, there was a filing last week for the SoFi Weekly Income ETF, ticker TGIF, which I love. This is an actively managed bond fund providing weekly income. Is that something you're involved in? And I know you can't speak directly to filings, but are you behind that? Because I know you partner with SoFi, obviously, on the other ETFs.
Yes. Okay. This is a SoFi idea. We're acting as the trust behind it, and we've helped them throughout the process. There's an active manager in Boston that they've hired to manage the portfolio, but the innovation really is that weekly dividend. On every Friday, thank God it's Friday, you get that weekly dividend, and we found through surveys that that was something that the SoFi cohorts, as we like to call them, or investors, were interested in.
Okay. Something else I saw last week was a press release that Title has entered into an agreement to license Blue Tractor's Shielded Alpha structure. So this is one of the quote-unquote non-transparent ETF structures. And as you may know, I have been, we'll say, a bit skeptical of this space. And I guess in a nutshell, I just feel like the trend over the past 10 years or so has been towards transparency. And if you look at the data, we know it's been a very challenging environment for active management. Now, I do think the active versus passive debate, look, it's tired, right? I mean, everybody's tired of talking about it. But if you look at the data, it's not great here. So the question I have for you is, give us the bull case on this structure. Like, why do you think non-transparent ETFs can gain traction?
Okay, so I've been somewhat of a skeptic over time as well, right? I love the transparency. All of our software in the ETF think tank is based off of the transparency. What I do know, though, is active, I know it's a tired debate, but it's also very exciting for the next wave of ETF growth, right? I do think that today, although active assets are only about 3% of the ETF landscape. They represent about 7% of the revenue. So that's a nice spread. So you can see why people want to come there. I think in the end, it's not going to be so much about the transparency for some of these active managers, because I don't think people embrace the transparency enough in the passive, right? They just assume that ETFs are so transparent that they don't bother to look, right? I've always pointed to the Vanguard lineup, where their definition of small cap is very different than everybody else's, right? The VB, the Vanguard small cap, has more overlap to the mid caps from everybody else than the small caps for everybody else. So I'm not going to say transparency is overrated, because it's my favorite, call it ETF client alignment factor. However, I think active is underrated, and people are looking for ways to differentiate themselves going forward. We like the blue tractor concept because it straddles the world of transparency. Right? I'm getting some look into the portfolio on a daily basis, which I think will work well with my technology. But I'm also obscuring the things that I'm afraid of getting front-running.
Yeah, and that shielded alpha structure, basically it's disclosing all of the holdings every single day, but it's not disclosing the actual portfolio weights, which is different than some of the other structures that are out there. And I guess on that note, I think right now, what are there, four other non-transparent structures out there, and they all use that proxy basket portfolio. How do you see this playing out longer term? Do you think all of these structures can coexist together and be successful, or do you see one sort of winning out over time?
You know, at this point, I'm going to say it's anybody's game, and it seems to me that it's just going to be iterations, right? There are multiple share classes of mutual funds, so this is just a play on the technology, right? It's a way of taking the ETF wrapper, which we all can agree takes an existing investment and enhances it, makes it more tax efficient, makes it more liquid. So I think it's possible that they all make it in different iterations. Obviously, some of the other ones have gotten the big boys involved. We're totally open to and in discussions with the other ones to have it licensed on our platform as well, because to us, at the end of the day, it's about the client. What the client wants is what we want to make available, as long as it's fiduciary.
By the way, I have to ask you, so last week I tweeted out that First Trust had launched a multi-manager ETF as a way to really remain fully transparent but sort of hide the manager secret sauce, right? Because you have two managers with their strategies, but the holdings are disclosed daily. And you actually responded to my tweet that you'd put forth this idea in a blog earlier this year. What was this, your idea originally? You should have like patented it or something.
Yeah, I found that patents don't work in the ETF industry. Back in January, when we all came back from the Florida conference before the pandemic really hit, before we knew that it hit, the conference was so much about ants. I had this idea when meeting with family offices down there that they would love to put their stuff in an ETF, but they don't want to show exactly their secret sauce. So if we did what the hedge fund world does and put three or four of them in, you could give complete transparency, but you wouldn't know which manager owned what. And I dubbed it the Ant Colony. I guess somebody at First Trust must have read it, and God bless them. I hope they make a lot of money with it. I think it's a really cool idea.
Mike, just in terms of the overall recipe for success for an active manager, I talked earlier about how it has been a challenging environment over the past 10 years. And if you just look historically, we know it's tough for an active manager to consistently generate outperformance. What do you think the recipe for success looks like in active management?
So I always like to quote Meb Faber here. He's a good friend. I'm sure he's been on the show a couple times. He always says that the key to success with active management is survival. Because eventually the market comes to you and people wake up and want to understand your strategy. So survival is the easiest way if you can figure out how to do it. There are a bunch of necessary conditions, right? One necessary condition is to be differentiated. It's really hard to succeed with another, slightly tilted large cap ETF that charges way more than the passive version. So higher active share. I would also say one of the things that made us very successful at Global X was connecting marketing with sales, and research, all three basically sitting together. That was an innovation that my partner Guillermo Trias kind of put together. You know, using that marketing, getting that message. Most active managers have been quiet historically in their hedge funds and mutual funds. When you come to the ETFs, you've got to embrace it the way Cathie Wood did and tell your story. That's how you create the necessary conditions for that survival to pay off.
No, I completely agree.
The first 3 years at ARC were not easy.
Yeah, you look at somebody like Cathie. Yeah, no, I was going to say, you look at somebody like Cathie or Meb Faber. I mean, I think one of the reasons they've been successful with their active products is because of the way they get out and are able to market their research. They're not afraid to go on camera, on podcasts, everywhere else, and really share their ideas out there. I think you have to do that and get your message out. And so when you had Cathie Wood out there talking about Tesla to 4,000 or whatever a couple of years ago, she took some heat for that. Some people said it was a marketing gimmick, but the fact is she was willing to go out there and make a call and defend it. And they're putting their research out to the public. And I agree with you. I think that's one of the recipes for success. Okay, Mike, just a few minutes left. Let's close with my rapid fire ETF questions. I think I put together some good ones for you. So first, give us one under the radar ETF trend that you think will accelerate over the next few years.
So the one that we're seeing the most right now is what I call conversion or BYOA. So I know JP Morgan and Goldman and whatnot have been called out for bringing their own assets. What we're seeing is RIAs, family offices, institutions that have an existing idea or existing strategy, and they want to simply make it better by moving it to the ETF wrapper. I think that trend is a big part of the next wave of ETF growth because it's structural alpha, right? You're guaranteeing a better return for your end investor on a tax-adjusted basis simply by converting the wrapper it's held in.
Yeah, you know, the one who comes to mind to me there is Six Meridian, who has launched some ETFs this year and have had a lot of success. Do you think that will put any sort of dent into the major players if you have all of these boutique managers popping up with ETFs, or do you think it's too small to move the needle?
There's a lot of incumbency in the ETF industry. That original ETF nerd paper not only looked at indexes, it looked at the concentration of our industry. And, you know, five players controlled 90% of the assets. That's just the reality. But that's not that uncommon. With most industries, you have that concentration. And there's still a lot of innovation, fiduciary help that the smaller players can provide and still have a profitable business. It's not easy, but it's good for the investor. It's never been a better time to be an investor, as my friend Tyrone Ross likes to say.
Okay. In terms of, I guess I'll call it competition in the ETF space, there was a story last week in RIA Biz about Betterment potentially looking to direct indexing instead of ETFs. How big of a threat do you think direct indexing is to ETFs?
So my partner Guillermo will disagree with me, but I don't think it's a threat at all. I think it's probably a benefit. Direct indexing has been around for 30 years. The tax benefits of it work if you've got, you know, $500,000 or more. With these smaller accounts, it's really about customization and prioritization. And, you know, my friend Kevin Carter started one of the first direct indexing companies almost 30 years ago. He sold it to Natixis. It still exists. It's called Active Index Advisors. And what he found was, he would go in and help somebody do the direct indexing at Google or whatever, and they'd say, all right, what do I do with the rest of my money? And he'd put it in an ETF. So I think it's the opposite. I think that there's not a threat. It's just another boon for ETF investing.
Okay, the Fed's bond ETF purchases. Do you agree or disagree with this?
I think this is an unfortunate, necessary thing, right? Stimulus, too much, too little, who knows? But the first wave was about stopping panic. And the bond purchases through the ETFs was a part of that stopping the panic, and it was necessary. For the ETF industry, it just legitimizes the structure further.
Okay. Do you think we'll see the Fed buy stock ETFs anytime in the next year?
I hope not. because that means things got worse. But if they were to need to invest in the equity market, it seems very likely to me that the ETF vehicle would be the one they would use.
Okay. All right. Lastly, going back to SoFi, who we talked a little bit about earlier, I know that tends to be a younger crowd of investors. And of course, one of the biggest market stories this year is the rise of young retail traders, right? Whatever the reason, whether it be working from home, stimulus checks, no sports, sports gambling, whatever, we're seeing record account openings and record trading volume at places like SoFi and, of course, Robinhood and even the larger brokerages as well. Do you think this is a good or bad thing? And you can interpret that question any way you want, but there's been a lot of conversation here about market impact, about whether it's dangerous for younger investors. So I'll let you take that wherever you want, but is this a good or bad thing?
So I think it's a good thing because people need to be engaged, right? There's been this history of underinvestment from the millennial crowd, and they need to catch up. The execution may not be perfect, but what we've seen, you know, at our own accounts or at SoFi is most people come in, they open a traditional robo-advised account that's traditional asset allocation, and then they go take some of their money and they speculate. You know, if you're speculating with money that you can afford to speculate with, okay. If you're going too far, well, that's a bad investment decision no matter what, right? That's a classic mistake. And I don't think it's right to blame the technology for the behavior. You know, Bogle used to complain about the ETF promoting more trading. That's an investor behavior. You can't blame the structure for people who use it incorrectly.
Well, and I would add to that, hopefully with more younger investors getting involved in the market, people will ramp up their educational efforts as well, whether it be the brokerages or fund companies, right? I think about what you're doing with ETF Think Tank, even if that's more geared towards financial advisors. I think overall, if we can get more education out there, you know, that's a good thing. And I think that will be one of the natural side effects of having more younger investors move into the market. I'm already seeing things out there about, you know, people putting educational videos on TikTok, right? And stuff we see out on Twitter. I think all of that is a positive. But Mike, we'll have to leave it there. Always a lot of fun. Keep up all of the great work. Really happy for all of your success. And I'm sure we'll chat again soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Nate.
That was Mike Venuto, co-founder and chief investment officer at Toroso Investments.